Welcome to Shiur number 3 in our Jewish Business Ethics Review course. This should have been the one I started with, but I wanted to start on a happy note. This is happy too. All my shiurim should be happy. We are reviewing the shiurim that are given throughout the year, and even those that are not with us in review, don't worry. We're doing as much material as possible. My first shiur that I give when I come into business shiur is I tell people who I am and my history in the business world. And the first topic was selling weapons to the PLO, calling cards to the 9/11 terrorists, a journey in business ethics. And we essentially try to define there, through business experiences, where ethics comes up all the time. We spoke about, I believe it was yesterday's shiur, that the Rambam seems to quote the Genevas Das Inyan in two different places. Not seems, he does. And he quotes it in Hilchos Deos, and in Hilchos Mechira. We said that the Hilchos Mechira is the halachos of Mechira, it's the halachos of business. However, says the case of Sefer HaKovetz, there's an ethical nature of business in itself. There's Mekadosh Shem Hashem. And even though technically maybe something might be mutter, there is a very big lesson of Midos Chatidus here, of being Mekadosh Shem Hashem when it comes to these very, very important laws. I like to start off always in my business classes trying to challenge everyone, and feel free to look up these two sources. The Gemara in Shabbos. This is the Gemara in Shabbos on Daf Lamed Aleph. The Gemara says, Amar Rava. Rava says, B'shasha mechanisim adam ladin. When a person goes up to the pearly gates after 120 years, they will ask him a series of questions. Luckily, Rava tells us what the questions are. The first question is, Nasat v'nasat be'emuna. All the commentaries say, Rashi on the spot, or were you honest in your business dealings? Did you have emuna? Kava idim l'Torah. Did you set upon yourself time to learn Torah? Set times. Asakta b'piru rivya. Were you oisek in one of the greatest mitzvahs of seeing to it that the world is fruitful? Sipita l'Yeshua. Did you really wait for Mashiach to come? V'chulu v'chulu. The Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin and Daf Zayin Amud Aleph, the Amar Rav Unai, ain't techilas dino shel adam nidon ella al divrei Torah. Says the Gemara that the first question you're going to be asked is, did you learn Torah? So the question, I hope, is obvious, and that is the two Gemaras seem to contradict each other. Gemara number one tells us that the first question is going to be, were you honest in your business dealings? And the second question is, were you a person who set aside time to learn? However, the second Gemara says that clearly the first and foremost question is, did you learn Torah? And the second Gemara, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, seemingly makes sense because isn't the ultimate question of all is Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam? So what's the answer? The Tosfos on the spot here in Daf Zayin in Sanhedrin says, V'had de'amrinon b'perek b'madlikem. Doesn't it say the Gemara in Shabbos we just quoted on Lamed Aleph, Sholim lo nesata v'nesata b'yamuna, v'achar kach kova itim l'Torah. Ha'im ba'adam she'oisek b'torah mori, ela shelo kova itim? Hachi mori, de'shelo osik klal, inami sholim lo techila almasa matam b'yamuna, makam his dino is al divrei Torah. V'hachi darish lei, what did he gain from the Torah itself? Did his Torah learning have a maisa? So he learned about the lachas of Chosha Mishpat, but he didn't learn it, right? Similar to the person who's sitting and learning halachas of Kibbut Avayim, his father walks in and asks him, I wanted to ask you a question. He goes, Dad, don't ask me anything. Don't you see I'm sitting and learning Torah? Get away from me, right? So that's not called learning of Torah. But I think the Eliyahu Rabba says it even much more blatant and bolet. And he says in the Eliyahu Rabba, Orachayim Kuf Nun Vav, V'yaviya mizikno meharash, D'hine sholem oiso koidem, Es nasat asat miyamuna, V'rak achakach sholem oiso, Im kava itim la Torah. V'af, the divrei Torah keneged kulam. Talmud Torah keneged kulam. Isn't the Gemara in Sanhedrin right? That should be the first question. And Mestama, that's what Tosfos is seemingly saying. Yeah, it really is the first question, but we want to see kind of who you are. Are you really a Torah Jew? And therefore, we look at your Maisa. I know, Mishum de im eino. Listen carefully. If im eino nosa v'notot be'emuna, if your business dealings are not honest, adif shelo yikava itim l'tayra. It's better that you don't even learn, because your learning is worthless. Da'arei hu chas v'sholom goyim chil Hashem b'limudah. Your Torah learning becomes a chil Hashem, because people see you learning and they know you're not honest in business dealings. And goes, oh, that's the schar of those that learn. That's the way they act. Doesn't make any sense. As the Gemara tells us in Yuma Daf Pevav, Mishakara v'shoyna, Mamish Tamid Chachamim, Bein Masim De'Emuna. You have Tamid Chachamim who are sitting and learning Torah and they don't act in the appropriate way. There's a problem with that. Oh, Ploni Shalamba Torah. Oh, Ein Avid Lamda Torah. Right? A person is learning Torah. Oh, Lo Laviv Shalamba Torah. Oh, Lo Larabba Shalamba Torah. Roy Kimmel writes, he says, Nebuch on his Rebbe, because it's his Rebbe's responsibility. It's his father's responsibility for not teaching him appropriately. That would explain, of course, why when it comes to the Ir Miklat, it says that your Rebbe comes with you to Ir Miklat. What kind of thing is this? And the answer is that the Rebbe comes to the Ir Miklat with you because clearly you have not learned the Torah appropriately. There's something that went wrong here with the Torah learning that you, even though it was mistakenly, killed somebody, but you weren't careful. Didn't your Rebbe teach you about Bar B'Shus Arabim? Didn't your Rebbe talk about the ikur of caring for other individuals? And that seems to be the ikur over here. That seems to be the important point when we're discussing this inyan. That seems to be a very, very important inyan. So, one can understand now, and I will comment, even though maybe one could say, not for now, don't get too political. This becomes an integral question when we're speaking about the inyanim of different rabbanim and what they're holding. I had a very difficult time over the last 24 hours when a psak came out from different rabbanim, including the great Rav Asher Weiss, don't daven anymore in a minyan. Even though there's a machlokes what the Misrad HaBriyut, the Ministry of Health here in Eretz Yisrael, really meant, right? Can it be? And then the psak came out by the chief rabbi and says, no, you can still daven with 10, as long as it's only 10. And we had a house minyan, Baruch Hashem, with a Sefer Torah. Everything seemed to be great. And Dafka Rav Asher Weiss was asked this question. My Rav, Rav Bagno, asked him this question. And he said, no, a house minyan is not good enough, because there's who knows who's going to come and go, and if you have three minyanim there, so those the first person that came could have left something there, unfortunately, a germ, and could make everybody. We have to be careful, and we're doing this not necessarily only for ourselves, especially the young, strapping 18, 19-year-old boys, so everything will be fine with them, but we're doing it to make sure that the older people of the generation don't get it. So how can it be that Rabbanon have come out in communities where they've clearly said, you're not allowed to daven, and said, oh, it's okay, just daven outside? It's hard to understand. And how some Rabbanim said continue to learn Torah in the Beit HaMidrashos, it's hard to understand as well. I admit that. And this could be very, very similar to what we're speaking about here in the Elia Rabbah. But a person who is not honest in his business dealings, clearly it is pogea to the Torah. It's a blotch to the Torah itself that he's learning, and better not learn the Torah. Let him walk around without the yarmulke on, and nobody will blame the Torah for the way that he's acting. And that's a very, very, very strict interpretation of this. And that's why, yes, the first question is, did you have emuna? It should be pointed out as well that during Dafka in this time, we think to ourselves about the many people we should be davening for who have lost their jobs. And that in itself is the ultimate test in emuna. As we've spoken about, unfortunately, YU has featured one of my shurim on the featured shir on YU Torah, Amuna 101 during the coronavirus, and this is what I bring out. This is the ultimate challenge. We will all be challenged with this because people will lose their jobs, and I don't think that this is appropriate what I'm about to say, but you know I'm not appropriate, and that is that I've been fortunate. I mean this. I've been fortunate to be out of a job. I've been fortunate to understand what it is not to have parnasa, to have dargos for parnasa, so that I can be sensitive to other people. And I can understand that it's not something that a person should just think is, it's obvious that everybody has jobs. We all know people out there that are suffering now, and we should reach out to them in this time. The Rambam clearly says this in how we act in being ethical. Where the Rambam writes in Hilchos Geneva, Perek Zayin, V'chol b'midos ha'karka, al ha'tamel chaveru b'masa ha'karka, oyver b'lo sase. If a person is dishonest, and he gives him the wrong measurements of the house, of the piece of land, right? That's pashut.
stoma. It's a pasuk in the Torah. He's over a losase of b'midah b'mishpat b'midah. Right? His weights and measures aren't honest. B'midah zah b'midah sakarka v'chein who b'kol inyan. The who b'inyan. A person has to be very, very careful that he is overly honest with it. And this reminds me of the great story of the great Abudraham. The Abudraham is one of the awesome commentaries, specifically when it comes to tefillah and his halachos, very, very important. And one could understand that his name is quite an interesting name. I believe it's a friend who told the story. How did he get his name, Abudraham? So, as many of the great rabbis of the previous generations, they worked, not just in chinuch, they had to have real jobs to support themselves. Many of them owned stores. The Gemara is replete with our great rabbis, our Tanaim, and what they did for a living. And that they actually, before Shabbos, those that didn't have, they would really secede from their work because they were really working, whether it was the sandler or it was the person who was tanning hides, v'chulu. So the Abudraham owned a store, and I'm just making this up. Let's say the store sold meat. I like meat, so I want to sell meat. And people would come in all the time, and people would order, let's say, 2 kilos of meat, right? And the person would order 2 kilos of meat, so there's obviously the way that you weigh it is you do 2 kilos. And obviously in those days, they didn't have electric scales or anything, so it's always going to be a little bit more. So it's kind of known that you pay for 2, and if it's 2.12, they're going to charge you that. Now that we have digital scales, they can tell you exactly what you owe. In those days, right, you're 2 pounds, 2 kilos, whatever it was, that's the amount you pay for it. The Abudraham felt that this was a little bit dishonest, and ethically he had a problem with it. And therefore, if you would ask for 2 pounds, you would weigh it 1 pound and then 1 pound. Why? Because on the 1 pound, you got a little bit extra. On the second pound, you got a little bit extra. He thought that this was the most appropriate way of doing business. And far and wide, everybody knew him to be unbelievably honest. And in fact, it wasn't just the Jews who would shop in this store, but I'm again making up that it's a butcher, but even the local Arabs, the Muslims, would come, and they would also shop in the store because they knew about his honesty. And one day, maybe Erev Shabbos, Yom HaShishi, and what would happen? Vayichul HaShamayim. Everything was going crazy because everybody was waiting online for the meat. And there was a young Arab man on the line, and he ordered his usual, whatever it was, his corned beef. I assume they had it in those countries. And he had his corned beef, and he ordered 4 kilos, let's say. And it was very quick, and he quickly took it from Kozen, and it ran out. And then he realized that he didn't do his chumrah. He didn't do it because it was the timing, you know, how long it takes, 1 pound, 1 pound, 1 pound. So he just did 4. And he couldn't believe it, and he started running after this Arab gentleman, and he said, stop, stop. He said, I made a mistake. I didn't weigh it appropriately. And the guy says, okay, I'm Moichel. No, 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 no. And he couldn't believe this. And he says, you know who you are? He says, you are the Abud. Abud is the father of the Dahan. Dahan is the value of money that they use in his country, which actually till today they use. He goes, Abud Dahan. He goes, you are the father of money because you're so careful about other people's money. What a great Kiddush Hashem. That is Business Ethics 101. You could write all the svarim in the world, but if you're defined as a tzaddik, even in the job that you have, that's an amazing thing. The Shulchan Aruch, of course, clearly speaks about as well, and this is what we're talking about, the Rambam's codification of it in Hilchos Geneva, about any defects in sales, what we spoke about yesterday, of Geneva's Das, you have to disclose. It's very dishonest for a person not to disclose if there's a problem or mum in the item. The Shulchan Aruch passes this in his Hilchos Ona, really, in Chosha Mishpat, Reish Lamed Bet. Amorch lechaveru karka, o avru behema, o shara metaltalim, v'nimsa b'mekach mum, and there's a mum in it, machzira. Afilu kamashanim. Rav Zilberstein quotes a shaila about this exact type of thing, where a person wanted a certain use for an item, and the person said, well, I thought you could also use it for something else, right? So he gives the Gemara, says, I believe in Bava Metzia, quotes about a person who bought an animal for plowing, a cow for plowing, and all of a sudden he sees he doesn't plow, and the guy knew that it wasn't going to plow. He said, yeah, but I sold it to you, it could be for shechita also, right? It was a kosher animal. So that seems to be dishonest. The question, what Lashon B'nai Adam is, we generally don't go with Rov. However, in this case, the case of Rav Zilberstein, I just say, it's actually on this week's Parsha, it's quoted in his English Sefer, I don't even know if he knows this in English Sefer, but it's quoted in the English Sefer, where he writes about a doctor who gives out vaccinations, $10 vaccinations. And he has that ability to make a lot of money on this, because apparently vaccination costs next to nothing. But there are two types of needles you can use. These are vaccinations for babies. So one of them that you could use is a thicker needle, which causes the baby a little bit more pain. Maybe the baby will cry a little bit, and the thinner needle. But it's a difference of $1 or $1.50 in the two. And therefore, he wanted to save the money. Would he be chayav? So he says that in this case, we would apply the laws of rov, even though in Chosha Mishra we generally don't. And if most people, he's not asking you to do this, but if you ask the parent, would you pay an extra dollar for the thinner needle that won't cause as much pain? Most parents aren't going to say, ah, it's a baby anyway, they're not going to feel anything. They would pay the extra dollar, and therefore he would have to pay the extra dollar, because that's what most people would do. And therefore he marshals this question. Again, an ethical question in its nature. So many of these questions are of what's the right thing to do. And therefore, the Shulchan Aruch here paskins that a person has to be very careful. He has to let them know. Machzirun, he goes, you can even return a mum after kama shanim, if it's a mekach tos, because he didn't know that, you didn't tell me about this mum. You didn't tell me the car was a lemon. He said, yeah, you know, it's, I remember when I bought a dining room table here in Eretz Yisrael. So we went all over Tel Aviv with different manufacturers that make it themselves, the tables. And as you probably know, you know, tables generally last many, many years. They're made out of wood. And I have this chus. I had my grandmother's table, my bubba, my papa's table, and brought it here to Eretz Yisrael, which I just think in itself is a wonderful thing to think about, how old that table was. And if I would have told them that I'm going to be taking this table with me with my family to Eretz Yisrael, what a wonderful zchus. In any case, Baruch Hashem, we were getting larger, we wanted to have more guests, and the table only extended a certain amount. So we went to get a table. So I said to the guy, when I purchased the table, I said to him, you know, ani rotze mashu shemachzik hamon shanim. I want it to last for, you know, many, many years, right? And that's what they generally, you go into places, oh, this is strong wood, oh, you know, they tap on it, this is gonna last you for 50 years. So he says to me, I don't know forever, ulay yisrim shana, maybe 20 years. Right? And I thought that was such a great, honest answer. And that's what it should be. Rapam, who was known to be the great tzaddik, and when it came specifically to business, people were very careful. Rabbi Reisman was obviously a Talmud, wrote the whole laws of Ribbis. But many different of the psukim, Rapam was very careful to be extremely honest. You know, there's a story told about I don't remember exactly what the Indian was, where Rapam's picture was put, they stapled it to different places about a different psak that he gave, and there was a big picture of him on it. And Rapam found out about this, and he thought it was inappropriate, besides the fact that it might be illegal to just put up signs anywhere you want, and he demanded that they take it down. And one of the signs they noticed was already taken down, and it was in front of the home of a person in Brooklyn, and not a Jewish person. So they decided to ask if he knew where the sign was. It was a neighbor of one of the Rabbanim. And he said, hey, so-and-so. So and he says, come with me to my house. And he goes to the house. And prominently over the fireplace at this non-Jew's house was this picture of Rapam. And the guy thought he was crazy. He says, what? He goes, oh, you probably think I'm crazy, but I know who Rapam is. And I see Rapam walk, and I see the way the Rapam acts. And I'm not Jewish, but I want my kids to emulate that type of person. That's exactly what this Gemara, the Eliyahu Rabba, is explaining in these two Gemaras. That is what business ethics is all about. There's a tremendous story told in the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, and it's as follows. In 1906, when the Chafetz Chaim published his famous Mishnah Berurah, he asked his son, Rav Aryeh Leib, who had moved to Warsaw to supervise the production of his Sefer. Later, somebody purchased a set of Mishnah Berurah with one section that was printed incorrectly. The famous story about the Chafetz Chaim, who was Oisik, as we know his life, with the halachas of Lashon Hara, said that, you know, there comes a time where people need a more concise halachic sefer. Anybody who has learned Mishnah Berurah can laugh a little bit, knowing that it's not that concise. And therefore, he asked great gedolim, they all said, you're 100% right, there should be something more concise, and you should write it. And he went on to different rabbanim, and it turned out, he said, well, nobody's going to do it, so I'll do it. So he goes now, and he finds that one of the printing was printed incorrectly. The man sent a complaint to the Chafetz Chaim, who immediately wrote his son the following letter, and I quote, what have you done to me, my son? All my days I've been concerned that I be spared from even the remotest likeness of Gezel. Never did I think I would be caught with outright Gezel. Now, because of you, I fell in the trap of full-fledged Gezel. He commanded his son to print a number of extra copies of the section that was omitted, obviously in a mistake, for fear that people were defrauded. And he put a notice in newspapers and spent money doing this that said, whoever purchased the Sefer Mishneh Berurah and is missing any places, write to me, and I will, at my own expense, mail this to you, which is what ended up happening. That was the great Chafetz Chaim. That's somebody who appreciates and understands the laws of being ethical in business. Even though one could have argued that al pi halacha, a person doesn't have to worry, it's not really violating halacha, but that's not important, because the ethics of it call us to be better and stronger. And these were the various stories that I related to my Talmidim about my experiences in working my first job in the Ministry of Defense of Israel, where I came upon a great business challenge, not that many months into my tenure there. And when I was working there, there was a very interesting, it was the time that right after Yitzhak Rabin was murdered, and Bibi Netanyahu had taken over. Hard to believe that he's still the prime minister, although I don't know how much longer. And Bibi Netanyahu had taken over. And Bibi wanted to make a very important statement that in some way, shape, or form, he would continue the ways of Yitzhak Rabin. And unfortunately, he gave away many of the holy sites, much of Beit Lechem, almost gave away much of Hebron, as we know, gave away much of Hebron, but came close to giving away Kever Rachel, if not for the great actions of Miri Adami and others who literally saved it, and other places. And part of that is that they would establish a new Palestinian authority. They would establish this new police force that would receive weapons. The U.S. was very nervous about them receiving weapons, and they said the only way that they would supply them, because they were brokering this deal, is the only way they would do it is if the Israeli government would draft a letter requesting from the Defense Department, William H. Cohn was the in the Department of Defense at the time, and it came to the desk of my boss, or my boss's boss, the person who was representing the U.S. mission, to write the letter. The little problem was is that their English was horrible, and my parents will laugh at this story because my parents both are great English teachers. My father, an English professor. I don't have such great grammar. I don't have such... I'm from Israel. I'm not so good. And in any case, I was the person in the Ministry of Defense who used to write all the letters. And they were having trouble with it. And it was... I remember it was for the Ministry of Defense. It was late at night. It was like 6 o'clock. And they generally closed their doors at a certain time because of security reasons. And they asked me to come over to write this letter. They said, listen, we're having a hard time. And I was reading the letter and it was horrible. And so I started writing the letter to the Honorable William H. Cohen, we hereby request, and basically we're asking for a certain amount of weapons, M16s and other types of artillery to go to this new Palestinian police force. And in the middle of writing it, I stopped. And I remember my boss looking at me and saying, Daniel, what, you have this writer's block? Why not? What, continue? And I stopped writing and I looked at them and I said, I can't continue writing. I can't. I said, I don't want to be the one who authored the letter that would get weapons to this Palestinian police force. Because I know that one day they'll use it for ill purposes, which of course we have found out that has been done. And my boss looks at me and his boss and says, you understand that if you don't complete the letter, you will be tried for treason. And I laughed and said, well, I'm not really an Israeli citizen. I wasn't then. So I'm not going to jail. So they said, okay, then you're fired. And I remember getting up and realizing that I said, I'm not doing it, and I left. And it was a walk of shame, and I walked out of there and got on the subway and went home and didn't tell anybody the story and couldn't believe what just happened. But that's ethics. Anyway, being a good Jew, just to end the story so you don't end on a bad note, I decided that the best thing to do was on a Thursday, so I took off Friday. And I decided on Monday I would walk in back to work, pretending like nothing happened, hoping maybe they would rehire me. And I did that. And as I started walking to the Ministry of Defense, 802nd Avenue, there's a lot of security there. So I was wondering if maybe already, when I got there, they knew already. There was a picture of me. Don't let this guy in. So I was very nervous. I remember walking in, security guard said hello to me. And then when we got to the floor of the Ministry of Defense, that's when, if my car didn't work, I probably would not just not open the door. They probably would have physically gotten me to leave. And my card works. I'm like, oh. And the security guard looks at me and doesn't know why I'm like sweating and going crazy. But like, and I'm like, uh-huh. And I sat at my desk and pretend like nothing happened. And as it were, my boss came up to me and said, what are you doing here? And he had a whole discussion. I was rehired. I was never really fired. And he said, if you ever do this again, blah, blah, blah. But that's one little story about business ethics. That's what ethics is all about. I had this when I was working in Net2Phone as well. Similar stories, giving information to the FBI that I didn't legally have to do, but I thought it was the ethical thing to try to show the calling cards that some of the terrorists unfortunately had purchased from us. That, I think, is what the core of business ethics is. We should be zeiche to understand that that's the test that we have now, the test of nesata v'nesata be'emuna, the emuna that we have, whether our jobs are on the brink, whether we know about our parents, daven for them. This is the time to think about this very, very important inyan of business ethics and the challenge we have of having emuna in the work world.